Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
It is 6:12. Pete McMurray in for Steve Cochran on this Friday. Jane Monzuris is here for Andrea Darlis, Dave Ennett. Man, this is going to be a great day. We're getting after it this morning.
You sure are, Pete.
We got a fun show. I'm ramped up. I hope I don't lose my energy by 7 o'clock.
I don't think you will. Have you ever lost your energy?
No, not at all. God, it's good to be back. Tried to hug Sandberg today. She gave me the Heisman. It's like, get away from me.
She's the only one you tried to hug, though.
Way too much hugging going on.
Everybody else a high five.
Right. She did?
No.
Oh.
She hugged everybody else.
She doesn't like to be touched, which is interesting. No. Don't touch Mary Sandberg. Boyle, Comcast Sportsnet, NBC Sports. All right, time for the 6 at 6. You ready, Jake?
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Get your kicks. With the top 6 at 6. Sponsored by American Weathermakers, the home of the 60-Minute Man.
Time for the 6 at 6 at number 1. The NRA took the rare step of endorsing a gun control measure backing tighter regulations on rapid-fire bump stock devices. Why are these things legal? I just don't understand it. Like the one used in Las Vegas, it's going to be interesting to see what plays out in Congress, because it seems like everyone is for it, but are they going to take that next step?
It seems that everyone is for it, but are they going to take the next step is the crucial answer, because they never, ever do.
And until
something like this happens, then it starts coming up in conversation again. But why does anybody ever need that type of device, ever?
We'll talk about that this morning at 6:40 and 7:40. At number 2, investigators still trying to find a motive in the Las Vegas shooting. Stephen Paddock's girlfriend said she had nothing to do with it and knew nothing, according to her attorney. We found out yesterday that Paddock reserved 2 rooms with a view at the Blackstone Hotel on Michigan Avenue during Lollapalooza. I'm there every year. That was the first thing I thought of after the Las Vegas shootings on Monday, and now it came out.
That it could have happened at Lollapalooza.
Yes.
I, of course, did not think of that, because I don't think of things like that, but it makes me sick to even begin to think that he rented those rooms.
They said that Paddock may have scouted other locations before targeting Vegas, like Fenway Park in Boston, of course, Lollapalooza here in Chicago, and Life is Beautiful, the music festival in Las Vegas. Number 3, Puerto Rico, 2 weeks after Hurricane Maria, people still living without power or running water. Could you believe that? No power, no running water for 2 weeks. How do you survive?
Yeah, you're waiting for help, and the help is not coming.
Thousands of people want to flee. They want to get out of there. So Florida alone anticipating as many as 100,000 arrivals.
And it's hard to get flights. People are not getting the flights to get out. They want to come to Chicago to be with their loved ones.
They're grabbing these puddle jumpers to get over to Florida. 100,000 people are going to land in Florida. At number 4, the 6 at 6, more trouble may be on the way. Tropical Storm Nate expected to hit Central America. It'll turn into a hurricane and strike the Gulf Coast on Sunday. Governor Rick Scott of Florida urged residents to restock their emergency kits. And here we go again.
When is hurricane season over?
November 30th.
Oh, we still have 2 months.
We have 2 months left of this.
I feel like there's been a lot.
At number 5, the defending World Series champion Chicago Cubs open the playoffs tonight, the National League Division Series against the Washington Nationals. Kyle Hendricks on the mound for the Cubs, Steven Strasburg for the Nats. Kerry Wood joins us at 8:35. Is Dusty Baker going to blow this for the Nationals?
I don't know that he's going to blow it, but the Nationals have that, man, they've got that albatross. They can't win a playoff series.
They can't.
I mean, they've been... You look back over the last 4 or 5 years. I mean, this team has been loaded with talent, and they can't get over the hump. And you don't want to see it happen against the Cubs. At some point, it will happen for them, you would think. But I'll tell you, at some point, we know it as well as anybody. That gets to you. That works on
absolutely.
A team,
it's on their minds. And you have Dusty Baker as a manager, and we're going to talk to Kerry Wood today at 8:35. Kerry played for him back in 2003.
Right.
Where Dusty blew it in game 6 for us. Mm-hmm. All right. And finally, number six, over 41,000 runners will participate in the 40th annual Chicago Marathon this Sunday. Anybody running? Anybody on the show?
I don't think I'm going to do it.
I was going to, but I decided to not to at the last moment.
Probably for the best.
Probably. Yeah.
15 runners out of those 41,000 plus will turn 40 on Sunday.
That's their birthday.
It'll be their birthday.
Yeah, I only run when being chased, so that's my reason.
I could never do a marathon.
I could see you doing it.
Never. No. My body falls apart after a 5K. If there's not beer at the end to relax me, I'm in bad shape.
I used to run when I was 12. Maybe 10. I think it was 10.
Oh, nice. Dave, you never ran a marathon?
No, I used to actually broadcast the marathon every year when I was at another station. And so, and I would get all fired up. Say, man, I got to do this one year. But every year it would come around and I'd be working. So, and then when I wasn't working anymore doing that, I decided, I don't think so. Because it's plus it's during football season. So you
right.
really
yeah.
need to devote so much time to training.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's a big undertaking.
You start training in the spring. I mean, I wish it was something that I really would love to run a marathon.
No.
But I don't know that my knees can handle it or my hip at this point.
We sound like old people now.
We are.
Jane and I are doing Dean's show on Sunday from 9 to 1, and I have two guys that are running in the marathon that are going to call us during the race.
No, that's cool.
They're not serious runners, of
can
course.
Can you
because,
run walk? Are they run walking?
Well, I mean, you can run and talk on the phone, right?
Well, they're going to walk, right? They're running the whole thing?
Yeah. You slow down. You can slow down to a jog.
Yeah,
you just want to keep moving.
I wouldn't even want to carry. Although I guess it would be nice if you're listening to music, you would carry a phone. Otherwise, I'm not sure I want to even carry a phone.
Right.
It's one more thing to weigh you down.
True.
Yeah, but you got to have tunes. 26, 4 hours without music?
No, you listen to the outside noises.
No.
The people cheering for you,
so
Pete.
Yes.
Pete.
The Rocky theme.
So
it's Pete. Come on.
How about those people that do this in full costume? Those kind of kill me, too.
Oh, yeah. People will be dressed up. And there's people that run barefoot and in flip-flops.
No.
No
hey,
joke.
Batman.
That's rough stuff. The 6 at 6, brought to you by American Weathermakers, heating and cooling the 60-minute men. All right, 312-981-7200. Coming up next, we'll talk to Lou Manfredini, Mr. Fix-It. Lou's first call. If you get in, you'll get a nice little prize, courtesy of American Weathermakers. That's 312-981-7200. Let's take a look at traffic. Here's Laura.
It's Lou's first call with Lou Manfredini and Steve Cochran, brought to you by American Weathermakers.
American Weathermakers, we won't be comfortable until you are.
You can hear him every Saturday morning at 7 a.m. The Mr. Fix-It Show, Saturday mornings. Here's Mr. Fix-It himself, Lou Manfredini, which is brought to you by American Weathermakers, heating and cooling, the 60-minute men. And you know I text you every single week because I go and work out Saturday mornings at 7 a.m. And I know you're sick of hearing me. I'm obsessed
like
with...
I'm in the middle of a show.
By the way, your tribute to Marlene, who has been here for 50 years, was that last week or 2 weeks ago that you did?
Last week we were out at Fox Home Center.
I'm like, I loved it. Marlene's worked here for 50 years, and Lou did a nice little tribute on the show, and
she
I just
does not
loved
like
it.
Knowing. She does not like it when she doesn't know anything. So I do not take any credit for planning that out. It was our wonderful account exec Kevin McDonough and the people from Fox Home Center too that kind of put it all together, and they said we want you to do this. And for those who are longtime listeners here at WGN, Marlene literally is really the best and has been here.
She is.
She's in that class of Orion and Carol Hankner, who was here forever and ever and ever, and such an integral part of the behind the scenes stuff that goes on at WGN Radio that the average listener doesn't know happens, but it's quite the glue to keep us all together.
50 years. I just want to work at a job for 50 months.
Right.
50 years.
Right. Yeah, and here's Cochran all excited about 1,000 shows.
Right.
Come on.
It was a big deal this week.
Yeah, right.
All right. I'm obsessed with my lawn. It's fall.
Hi, Lou.
I need to ask you about my lawn. Do I need to do anything?
Yeah, you need to wait till the leaves fall. And once they fall, you're going to rake them up, the vast majority of them up. And then if you're someone that cuts your own lawn.
I do.
Let them mulch a little bit of that into the soil. Then rake up a little bit so that you don't choke that lawn over the winter. And then a winterizer fertilizer is a great idea. It's a slow release that will just really, it's not going to do anything this time of year, but it's going to sit there all winter long, and it's going to help green it up and help for the root growth over the late fall and then early spring when you go back at it again. So actually fall is one of the best times to seed your lawn because the soil temperature is warm, but the air temperature starts to cool a little bit, and thus it germinates better. So it's a great time if you've got some areas that you've had problems with, and because the trees start to shed their leaves a little bit, you tend to get a little more sun in those areas to help the seed germinate.
Okay. Can you suggest a winterizing fertilizer for me?
I really don't care what you use on that one because it's all, most of them are chemical-based.
They're all the same.
Whether it's a Scotts product, an Ace product, a Jonathan Green.
Love Jonathan Green.
Yeah, a
Black
bunch
Beauty
of
grass
products.
Seed is the best.
Yeah.
It grows like crazy.
Pete is obsessed with
I'm
his
telling
lawn.
You, he has coached me over the
you're
years.
Really,
My lawn looks fantastic.
It's like a thing, Jane. It's like a weird, it's almost like a tick with him in the lawn.
He sends me pictures of the lawn. After
I send him
done...
to Lou, too.
Oh, you do?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a lovely lawn, Pete. You've done a nice job.
All right. Second question before we get to our first caller. I was cleaning the basement last weekend, and I'm looking at my sump pump thinking, okay, I've lived in this house for 11 years. I've never replaced the sump pump. How often do you? Really?
On average, you know, if it's a sump pump that gets regular activity, meaning that you do get, you know, it runs, you hear it run, you know, whatever, on a daily basis, kind of the rule of thumb is 7 years for the pump, three
okay.
years for the switch.
Wow.
So the switch, depending on the type of pump you have, either is fastened to the pump itself or it's part of the pump, or it's what they call a tethered switch that floats. Those are much easier to replace. The ones that are attached to the body of the pump are a little more difficult. But, you know, really good sump pumps are expensive. They're $300. So replacing that is an investment. The switch you can buy for, you know, $40, $50. And so I tell people if every 3 years, if it's a pump that moves a lot.
It does.
Switch the switch every three. And then after that year, you know, 7-8 years, swap out the pump.
Can I do that myself?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Not Pete.
Yes, if you go to YouTube, you can do anything now. You just watch the video,
yeah,
you
I
can
mean,
do it.
And I'm a fan of the YouTube thing, but, you know, YouTube doesn't answer everything. So the thing is, you really have to be careful about the safety and security of it all. You unplug the pump. There's a check valve. If the thing is 13 years old, I'd also replace the check valve, which means when you loosen that check valve, the water that's above it's going to run all over you, so you have to be very careful how you do that.
Lou, my college job was replacing water meters.
Oh, well, then you're good.
Yeah. Oh.
Thank
yeah,
you.
That's nice, Pete.
Lombard, Oak Park. Yeah, that's what I did. All right, let's go to Jim in Princeton. Jim, what is your question for Lou? Lou's first call.
Yes, I had talked to Lou a couple of weeks ago about remodeling a basement, and he recommended putting in a bathroom. I Googled it, and there's a go-anywhere toilet that it uses a macerating pump.
The Quick John?
I was wondering...
was that the brand, the Quick John?
Yeah, whether you recommended that or not.
I love the Quick John. Basically, what it is you don't have to do any plumbing below grade, meaning that you don't have to cut out the concrete. Essentially, it's a macerating toilet, which means it's a toilet that acts mm-hmm. like an ejector pit, and it grinds up any solids that you would
sure.
use.
Yeah.
It has a I think, a 1-inch or maybe a 3/4-inch pipe that comes out of the back that it then pumps out. And they even have a shower base that you can buy that's elevated that goes into that pump as well. And when it's installed correctly and trimmed out properly, you would be hard-pressed, the average person, to know that it didn't go into the ground whatsoever. And,
yeah.
You know, the investment, I think that the tub and the toilet and then the sink is just a regular sink you pipe into it, it would cost you anywhere from about $1,000 to maybe $1,500 all in.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you come in and break up that floor and have a plumber do all that, you're talking thousands. So, if you were going to tell me you're going to use this bathroom every single day, I'd be like, you know, it's a mechanical pump, blah, 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 and it's smaller. But if it's something that's going to get used, you know, 20 times a year, 50 times a year, fine.
Well, great. I'd never heard of it before.
Yeah, Quick John. It's been around a long time.
Quick John. Jim, hold on. We're going to set you up with the April Air Wi-Fi thermostat, allowing you to adjust the temperature of your home's air on your smartphone, all brought to you by American Weathermakers, home of the 60-Minute Men. Call 855-955-HVAC. Lou, I'll be listening tomorrow morning.
I'll be on. Love you.
I love you, too. Thanks, buddy.
Bye.
Lou Manfredini, Mr. Fix-It.
He's so great.
He's the best.
I have a million questions just lined up in my head that I could just sit down and ask him. But I won't text him like you do, Pete.
I text him all the time. He's got to be sick of me. I need to get him a gift certificate.
You
because
do.
I do.
I'm nice like, way to I, say thank you.
You know, I'm talking about replacing my sump pump. He's the go-to guy. If I screw something up, I will
you
text him or call him. You know, that's what you do.
A lot of water just dumped on my head, and I'm not really sure why. Remember you said something about me getting wet?
I forgot to turn off that water. What should I do? Remember, this is we're celebrating Steve Cochran's 1,000th show this week. Listen for Abigail Grace. Caller 7 will win a nice little prize package. Pete McMurray in for Steve Cochran. Jane Monzuris. In for Andrea Darlis, it is 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Pete McMurray in for Steve Cochran. Jane Monzuris is here. We'd like to welcome back the congressman from the 8th District, Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy. Congressman, how are you, sir?
Hey, Pete, how are you? Good morning.
You know what? I filled in for Steve quite a bit. We've talked on many occasions. You know, it finally hit me this week that we have a lot in common.
How's that, Pete?
We are both from Peoria.
Oh, my gosh. That is wonderful.
You grew up in Peoria. I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I know your cousin, the you know, Ray LaHood and the LaHood family well.
Yes, absolutely.
And, but I didn't know that you grew up in Peoria. I knew there was something I liked about you.
And we are both Harvard graduates.
Ooh, okay, okay.
Well, wait a second. Hold on.
He's lying.
No, no, no. The connection is your father is a professor at Bradley, and Jane and I both went to Bradley
what?
University. That's why he moved to Peoria when he was a youngster.
You're kidding. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, my father, believe it or not, he's still on the faculty of the engineering school, and it's been about 40 years that he's been on the faculty.
Wow.
So he is he loves teaching, he loves the research, and we're all kind of Bradley Braves fans.
So are we, right here in the studio. Raja, I didn't get to take your dad's classes because I wasn't in the engineering building ever.
I don't even know where it is on campus.
Nice school.
Congressman, let's talk gun control. After Las Vegas this week, people are calling for gun control. I know that it's a hot topic this week, but what's going to happen next week?
Well, first of all, we're just all incredibly saddened by what happened in Las Vegas, but I think thoughts and prayers are not enough at this point. I'm glad to hear that Republican leadership and indeed the NRA is talking about potentially outlawing something called bump fire stocks or bumper stocks. These are devices that enable semi-automatic weapons to become fully automatic. I'm the original co-sponsor of this legislation in the House, and I think it's actually going to have some movement next week or maybe the following as Republicans increasingly view this as an important measure to prevent what happened in Las Vegas.
My brother Jamie is an avid hunter, and I asked him this week, why are bump stocks legal? And he said the argument is it's for people that have arthritis or a handicap so they can shoot a gun. I go, are you kidding me? Really? It turns semi-automatic rifles into a machine gun. That's what happened in Las Vegas. I can't believe that these are legal.
Yeah, I mean, if you just go onto YouTube and look up bumper stocks or bump fire stocks, you know, the folks who are talking about it are not, you know, necessarily advocating it because it helps with arthritis. What they want is they want the feel of an automatic weapon or a machine gun. And as you know, machine guns have been illegal in this country since at least 1986. You can still purchase these weapons under very, very heavily regulated conditions if they were manufactured before 1986. But, you know, this is something that, you know, we've got to do right away. But can I just add that, you know, I hope that this opens a conversation on some other measures as well, including, you know, universal background checks, closing the gun show loophole, and also, you know, taking a look at high-capacity magazines, which allow for numerous rounds to be fired in quick succession. So, you know, bumper stocks is, I hope, just the first on a menu of items that we start looking at.
Don't you think that they're going to need a big-name Republican to get behind this?
Well, you know, Paul Ryan himself talked about this issue a couple days ago, I believe, with Hugh Hewitt. And I think that, you know, if someone like Paul Ryan, if someone like I heard Tom Cole from Oklahoma talk about this issue, and other folks start to sponsor this legislation, then it has a real chance of moving forward. I know in the House, a Republican from Florida named Carlos Curbelo is planning to introduce legislation as well. So hopefully we can get enough heft behind this on the other side that, you know, it really has a chance of moving.
We're talking with Congressman Raja from the 8th District. Let's talk about why you're collecting signatures. What are you doing that for?
A couple things. One is you may already be aware of this, but, you know, right now we're talking about tax reform in the House and the Senate. And one of the things that's slated for elimination under the Republican budget is something called the state and local tax deduction, also known as the SALT deduction. And I'm really opposed to it because eliminating it would basically mean eliminating double taxation, or eliminating what allows people to avoid double taxation. And basically in Cook County, for instance, the SALT deduction allows people to save $4,000 a year. In Kane County, $5,000, and DuPage, $6,600 per year. So if you were to eliminate this deduction, basically we'd have a tax increase of those amounts on working families. And, you know, in the name of tax reform, we can't allow for tax increases on the middle class or working families.
So why would they get rid of this? What's the motivation behind it?
It's pure and simple. They want a source of money to fuel tax cuts under their quote-unquote tax reform proposal. But, you know, taking money from working families to fuel tax cuts is not the real, in my opinion, it's just the wrong way to go. You know, working families are taking it in the shins, Pete.
Oh, yeah.
You see child care expenses going up, health care expenses going up, education expenses going up. You see wages and salaries flatlining. And so, you know, you see if you have like an average family in DuPage or Cook seeing their taxes increase by, you know, $4,000 to $6,000 per year, that's huge. That's a huge tax increase. And, you know, I'm totally against that. I'm totally opposed to increasing taxes on these folks.
How can people sign the petition?
Well, they can contact my office, and they can also go to our website, which is krishnamoorthy.house.gov. A lot of people can't spell my name, so they can just Google Raja, R-A-J-A, and Congress, and they'll come across.
You're the first one that comes up. I do it all the time. Seriously.
There's only one Raja in Congress. You forgot to mention there's something else that you and I share in common, Pete. I think I may have mentioned this to you before, but I introduced myself on the south side of Chicago as Raja Krishnamoorthy, and they say, Roger Christian Murphy. Nice to meet you. So, we have this Irish heritage thing we should probably mention.
Just call me Raja. Raja, can I just quickly ask you about health care? It's time to renew health insurance. Yes. And if you're in the marketplace or you're self-employed, you have very limited plans. I know lots of movement has not been done or passed to change or repeal Obamacare. Are we going to see some plans that are affordable for people that have to go out and get in their individual plans? Because I know that as a freelancer, I pay a lot of money and I'm not able to see my doctors. And so it's a little bit tough.
I hope so, Jane. You know, for the first time, we're seeing some bipartisan movement on this, and I'm very heartened by it. Senator Lamar Alexander and Senator Patty Murray of Tennessee and Washington State, respectively, in the Senate, have started real negotiations on how do we control for the increase in premiums on the individual health markets and how do we fix Obamacare in a bipartisan fashion. I have myself sponsored or broached the topic of how do we make sure that what are called cost-sharing subsidies to allow people to avoid huge out-of-pocket expenses. How do we make sure that that's not subject to, elimination by the president through administrative action? So in other words, how do we make sure that that is legislatively prescribed? Another thing is, making sure that young invincibles are able to afford health care on the exchanges. Right. Because right now, they're faced with the choice of, do I pay the penalty, which is like $400 or $500, or do I pay for the lowest cost health plan, which is like a bronze health plan for $3,000 to $4,000? And they oftentimes choose the penalty. And so we have to figure out a way to make that health insurance a little more affordable for them, so they can, make the overall risk pool a little broader. And if you make it broader and have healthier younger people on the exchanges, then overall health costs should go down. So those are a couple of the things that I'm hoping that comes out of the bipartisan discussions that have begun.
Congressman, have a great weekend. We need more people like you in Congress, forward thinkers. We do, seriously.
Hey, go Cubs.
Go Cubs, that's right.
Thanks, Raja.
Have a good weekend. Thanks so much.
Thank you. You too. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Let's take a look at traffic before the Blackhawks Express. The Blackhawks Express, by the way, was brought to you by Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. Dave, what was the final score of that Blackhawks game? I went to sleep when it was 8-1.
It was 10-1 was the final.
10-1. All right. Here we go with the Blackhawks Express.
Chicago!
Crosby and Taves will face off. The 2017-18 season for the Chicago Blackhawks is underway as Taves wins the draw. Patrick Kane behind the net to Hartman in front. He shoots. He scores! The first goal of the season. A brilliant behind-the-back feed by Patrick Kane from behind the Penguin net. He had Niemi moving off the right post to the left, and Hartman had about half a net to shoot at. He didn't miss. It's 1-0 Hawks. Saad picks it up on a 3-on-1 the other way. Over the Penguin line to Panic to Saad, but he scores! Brandon Saad crashing the net! Kane over the Penguin line, right wing to the circle, spinorama, put it across the small pitch, and he scores! Another brilliant setup by Kane! 3 goals in less than a minute and a half. Kane's got it back to Keith left point, to Siebert right point, snaps it on goal. Blocker save, here's Saad on the rebound, and he scores! Brandon Saad with a second goal of the night! Take it back by Anisimov. Quick pass, Sharp breaks in over the Penguin line behind the defense down the right wing. Shoots and scores! Welcome back to the Windy City, the sharp-dressed man! Sharp with his first goal of the season! Quick pass over to Hartman to Kane over the Penguin line. Down the right wing, moves in, backhand, he scores! And the Hawks get the puck in the Penguin net and get the goal right back! Patrick Kane whips a backhander into the top shelf for the first goal of the season. The Hawks have the 5-goal margin back. It's 6-1. Penguins come to full strength to Janmyr, a high slot fire, save made, rebound, score! Brilliant play by Schmaltz! Hartman gave it to Kane over the Penguin line. Hit the trailer, a shot by Schmaltz, he scores! Nick Schmaltz rips it into the top shelf over Murray's shoulder. Taves racing away with a puck over the Penguin line to the right circle. Put it in front. Saad, he scores! Hat trick from Brandon Saad! And the Hawks now lead the Penguins 9-1. Keith drops it to Kane, to Hartman, top of the left circle. Shoots, Murray the save. Rebound, score! Seabrook is first of the year! And the Blackhawks score the highest number of goals in team history in a home opener, and simultaneously beat the two-time Stanley Cup champion Pittsburgh Penguins 10-1. And I can guarantee you nobody in the hockey world saw this one coming.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Thanks. Have a great rest of the day. Go Cats.
720 WGN 715. We welcome in the coach of Northwestern football, and it's brought to you by Dave.
Brought to you by the Fields Auto Group. And now I will turn it over to the last quarterback in the history of Bradley University football, Pete McMurray.
Coach Fitz. Coach, great to talk to you, sir. How are you?
Hey, Pete. How you doing? Good morning, Mr. Cat. Top of the Friday morning to your partner. Homecoming weekend.
How about that?
Are you guys? I know you guys are pumped. It's homecoming. But first, let me just say, Coach, I heard you after the game. I was listening to the post game on WGN last Saturday. You couldn't have been more disappointed after that game at Camp Randall.
Well, we had every opportunity to win that football game, and it wasn't to discredit the Badgers. It was that we, you know, really made a ton of mistakes that cost us that football game. And you know, it was disappointing to me. You know, I thought our guys put in really a great first month of work and practice. And, you know, we've got to keep working our tails off as coaches to get these guys to play consistently. And we're just not there yet. And, you know, I thought I saw us show glimpses of that at times on Saturday, but not enough and not four quarters worth to beat a very good football team on the road.
Well, you have an altogether different challenge coming in this week, the defending Big Ten champs. And I look at this, Coach, and you talked about it this week. Saquon Barkley of Penn State and Justin Jackson from Northwestern, the consensus two best running backs in the Big Ten, two of the best in the country. Justin, the leading active rusher in the Big Ten, and a second leading active rusher in college football. Now, Barkley is leading the nation, 243 all-purpose yards a game. That's just rushing and receiving. Last week he ran a kickoff back for a touchdown and threw a touchdown pass. What you've seen some great players over the years, but what makes this guy so hard to stop?
Yeah, now you know why I haven't slept very well all week.
No kidding.
I think first of all, you know, you read the, you know, the off season and you just see his work ethic. He runs like a young man who's 180 pounds, but he's 230 pounds. So he's got a great size-speed combination. He's got incredible balance and vision. And then, you know, if you get him bottled up, he's got the ability to turn the corner and break the ball outside and has that breakaway speed where very few people can tackle him. So you got to keep him bottled up. You got to keep him inside the framework of your defense. And then, you know, Joe Moorhead, their coordinator, does a great job. If you stop things, he's going to go to other things. If you stop their main aspects of their offense, then he's going to go to some other things to try to get Saquon the ball. So huge challenge for our defense, without a doubt.
And it's in no way to underestimate what your guy does, Justin Jackson, but he's been a little bit banged up. He said this week that he was feeling better. I think you said that he was better than he'd been in a month. So how's he looked at practice this week?
Well, first he's practiced, so that's been good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's been probably 2 weeks since he's really been full going practice. So he's feeling better. He looked great this week. And, you know, we need to get our best players on offense going. And it starts with our battery in the backfield with Clayton and Justin. And a healthy Justin Jackson gives us a chance in every game.
Barkley opened the game last week with that run back against Indiana.
Yeah,
Coach, you've never lost to Penn State coach James Franklin. Do you think about that?
You know, not really. I think it's more just pure luck. We've been fortunate, especially in the last couple of games against Penn State, to be pretty opportunistic. And we created some big turnovers when we were there. A couple of, you know, the last time we were in Happy Valley in the game that we had here. You know, the guy I'm most proud of in watching that film was Zach Oliver, a young man that came into that game midway through the first quarter and, you know, got us the victory at quarterback when Clayton went down as a redshirt freshman. So, you think about how you're going to stop people, how you're going to execute offensively, and what you got to do in the kicking game more so than anything else.
You have a honorary captain for every game at home, and the guy coming back tomorrow, I know, is one that's going to be very familiar, not just to your fans, but all football fans.
Well, we're excited to have Trevor Siemian back, Dave. There's no question. You know, he's got his bye week. And, you know, sometimes these guys that on Sunday can find a way to make it back during the bye week. Other times those guys just want to sleep. And to Trevor's credit, when I asked him over the summer, he said, absolutely, coach, I'll be there in a heartbeat. So we're incredibly proud of him. No one's surprised in our program, you know, that he's having success that I think it would be to this level of success. I'm not sure any of us could have predicted that, but, you know, he's just a young man that we're all very proud of, and I still think his best football is ahead of him. So I look forward to watching his career continue to unfold.
It is homecoming Saturday. The 5-0 Nittany Lions come to town. You're on ABC. If that doesn't motivate you and your players, I don't know what will.
Yeah, no, I mean, our guys will be fired up. I mean, it's anytime you play Big Ten games and then you play the team that's defending champs and you watch them on tape and how well they've played, you know, it really goes back to the way you prepare and whether or not you bring it into the three-hour window on Saturday. And so they've prepared really well. I look forward to seeing if we can take that preparation into playing and performing consistently on Saturday at 11 o'clock.
Do you buy Dave Ennett a corsage for Saturday?
What do you mean by that?
It's homecoming.
No.
How about your wife? Does she get a corsage, a wrist or a chest corsage?
No, I'm getting ready to coach a football game. We're not worried about the day.
Coach, you're the best. Good luck on Saturday.
Thanks, guys.
All right, thanks, Coach.
Thanks a lot. Go
Coach Bye-bye. Fitz, of course, it's
he
right
cut
here.
Off his Go Cats there.
Oh, shoot.
No, he got it. He okay. got it. By the way, Coach Fitz brought to you by the Fields Auto Group. ABC, really? ABC?
And 720 okay. WGN with Dave Ennett.
Okay, thank
yes.
you.
I listened to the fourth quarter and the post game on the radio last week.
Then you know we carry the games.
Yes, I do. Okay. I love listening to you. You get me pumped
you
up, too.
You just said that because I told him that off the air. By the way, scoring brownie points because he's listening to me.
All right. We have Hawk tickets coming up next. Let's take a look at traffic at 722. Here's Laura Vaughn. Yeah. 312-981-7200. You get the Hawker Riddle correct. We'll set you up with a pair of tickets to see the Blackhawks take on Columbus tomorrow. And you're entered to win four season tickets for next year, courtesy of Four Seasons Heating and Air Conditioning and Plumbing. For all the right reasons, Four Seasons. Find them online at FourSeasonsHeatingCooling.com. Here it is, the Hawker Riddle. Is everyone ready?
Yes.
I sound like noodles I ate in the dorm. Giant in stature, but short in my form. A successful marriage because I follow the rule from D.C. to Chi-Town, I make the 55th cool. I sound like noodles I ate in the dorm. Giant in stature, but short in my form. A successful marriage because I follow the rule from D.C. to Chi-Town, I make the 55th cool. 312-981-7200. Quick break and we'll get a winner coming up next. Time for the Hawk Riddle. We'll get a winner. I sound like noodles I ate in the dorm. Giant in stature, but short in my form. A successful marriage because I followed the rule from D.C. to Chi-Town. I make the 55th cool. Let's go to Eric in Ingleside. Eric.
Hey.
What's the answer, buddy?
Rahm Emanuel.
Rahm Emanuel is
yes.
correct.
Like ramen.
Yes, right. Ramen, but Rahm Emanuel.
Took me a minute to figure
yes.
that out.
Uh-huh. I didn't write this, Mr. Mayor, if you're listening right now. Eric, hold on. We're going to set you up with a pair of tickets. You're going to see the Hawks take on Columbus tomorrow night, and you're entered to win four season tickets to next year, courtesy of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. For all the right reasons, Four Seasons, find them online at FourSeasonsHeatingCooling.com.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Pete McMurray in for Steve Cochran. It is 7:41. Jane Monzuris is here in for Andrea Darlis, as Dave Schwann is. Dave Ennett also here. Our next guest, he's a candidate in the Democratic Party primary for governor of Illinois in the 2018 election. We'd like to welcome back to the show. It's Chris Kennedy. Chris, how are you?
Great, thanks. Thank you for having me back this morning.
When this all went down in Las Vegas Sunday night, what was your first reaction on Monday morning?
mean, I think I was just shocked that it was like watching Groundhog Day in a very violent way. And the notion that these incidences are increasing with frequency and they're getting larger in impact. I feel terrible for the families, and I know that the hurt, the pain that they feel will last the entirety of their lifetimes. In many ways, the mental challenges that they feel, the mental illness, will be passed on to another generation, and that shouldn't happen in our country.
Boy, you don't even think about that. I have to tell you, I've been to Vegas easily over 50 times. The last four times I've been there, I've stayed at Mandalay. And when I started hearing about this on Monday, it really affected me. And I've never been closely affected by guns like you have. Your father, of course, in 1968, your uncle in 1963, your running mate, Rod Joy, his 23-year-old son was shot and killed this past summer. You are right there. So you have a chance as a spokesperson to do something or lead a charge.
Well, I would hope that Congress reacts. I think there's so much that we don't know. We don't understand his motives. We don't understand why this epidemic is spreading and why it's getting worse as it spreads. The fact is that we're hidden from the science and the truth because the federal government, really the Congress, has prevented the Centers for Disease Control and the National Institutes of Health from studying the very topic. We should never be afraid of the truth. We should never be afraid of science. And we need to understand why these unique acts are occurring so frequently in the United States.
Yeah, and then that also brings up, you know, the discussion about gun control and legislation. And they're talking now that there'll be some measures passed on this bump stock, that which nobody knew about prior to Monday. Now everyone is, you know, knows what this device is.
And up in arms.
When and if this conversation gets passed, does it open up the movement for more legislation to change, like universal background checks or how many guns somebody can own? Or what type of guns somebody can own?
Well, I'd say this. I don't think we need to impinge on the Second Amendment in order to fight off these mass shootings. This is a completely unique epidemic in the United States, and it's unique to the United States in the world. Other places do not suffer as frequently as we do or as such large numbers. And Aurora, Colorado, or Orlando, Florida, Newtown, Connecticut, now Las Vegas. And the truth is that the bump stock issue has been around for years, and trying to confront a wave of gun violence in this country by banning bump stock, it's like lightening the load of the Queen Mary by throwing a deck chair over the side. And we cannot let Congress off the hook by taking a tiny, tiny, small action and think that they've got their job done.
I know, but at least it's a start, Chris. I mean, just for the record, I support the Second Amendment, but the bump stocks and the semi-automatic weapons, there's no reason these should be sold to the general public.
No, and I would say that all the responsible gun owners that I know believe in that notion that those that the bump stock and any sort of automatic weapon should be banned. And the truth is we ask police officers and other first responders to defend us every day, and we need to protect them as well. But it's not enough. The notion that we have people on the no-fly list who could go out and get a gun, the idea that people with mental illness can get a gun, the idea that people in the midst of a nasty divorce or interpersonal struggles with another individual who's deemed a threat to their spouse or loved one or family can still go out and get a gun. That's outrageous.
Yeah, and so it goes deeper than just gun laws. It goes into what you're saying, and that is really dissecting and looking into mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we capture that before any of these tragedies actually happen?
And are there ways that we could intervene? And truthfully, we need to set the tone at the top. The President of the United States needs to play a role in reassuring Americans that they're part of a larger American family, that they're not going to be left alone, that there's no reason for them to feel isolated. And cut off from the rest of society. And when we isolate people, Americans in the Virgin Islands or Puerto Rico, when we celebrate the notion that white supremacists march on Charlottesville, we're sending a message to people that, well, the government doesn't care, that you're there to defend yourself, that you have no allies in government. And that's a shocking reality for many people. And I think it can push them to a place that we don't want them to land.
All right. We're talking with Chris Kennedy. I have to ask you about the campaign trail. Did you realize that it would be this grueling, running for governor? I mean, you're on the road nonstop, aren't you?
All the time. And the truth is, I enjoy being with other people. And so I guess I get a little bit of energy out of the whole thing. The reality is the state has enormous problems and challenges, and we have a situation where we're not confronting those. And that reality, that idea that we're not dealing with the fundamental issues that face us in the state, that's what's overwhelming and, I'd say, a little bit depressing. You talk about mental illness, which I think we all understand at some level that the killer in Las Vegas was suffering from mental illness. And here in Illinois, we've cut off so much of the support for people with mental illness, and you have to wonder what that's going to lead to in the future of this state.
Right. Chris, thanks for taking time out this morning. We appreciate it.
Chris, I just wanted to say thank you really quick. In 1994, I worked for you at MMPI, and this is my chance to say thanks for giving my first job. Yeah.
Wait a second. Was he a good boss?
He was a great boss. I worked in the marketing department for Jennifer Woodford, and I marched into
Wolford,
her office.
Yes,
yeah,
sir.
Woodford. I marched into her office, and I was like, hi, I'm Jane. And I, you know, it was
I'm sure he remembers
you. No, he doesn't remember me at all, but right. The office was nice.
Well, when you ran the Mart, I remember, because I worked there, you used to just hang out in the hallways and talk to everyone. That was, you know, you worked the room.
It's good to be with your customers. And truthfully, one of the great things about being at the Mart was just to see the great outcomes for so many people. So I love the arc of your career, Jane. I'm so proud of it.
Thank you. Do you remember when the Mart was dedicated to the World Trade Center Chicago?
Oh, sure.
That's wow. Where I was there. That was me doing that job.
I do have to say, I haven't been back to the Merchandise Mart in 5 years. I just went
it's
back
beautiful.
There and had lunch. I can't believe it.
Yes.
I can't believe how much it's changed.
Fantastic.
It really
wow.
is. Yeah.
I mean, it really is a destination now. Chris, back on the road, buddy. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Chris.
Okay, take care. See you. Bye-bye.
Chris Kennedy. You worked for him back in what year?
1994.
That is
fresh
hilarious.
Out of Bradley University.
I'm sure he remembers.
I remember what I was wearing the day I met him.
Yeah. What?
Yeah.
You're kidding.
I was wearing a long pencil brown wool skirt.
Oh, God.
Yeah. We
Women.
Had a free train ride
oh,
in from the suburbs.
We have a golf foursome at Orchard Valley Golf Course in Aurora to give away. Remember, listen up for Steve's granddaughter, Abigail Grace. They're celebrating 1,000 shows this week. When you hear Abigail Grace, caller number 7, we'll pick up that golf foursome at Orchard Valley Golf Course in Aurora. 7:55, Pete McMurray in for Steve Cochran. Jane Monsouris is here in for Andrea Darlis. Today, I woke up at 3 a.m. I've been up ever since.
Why is that? Because you set your alarm early, or you were worried about not getting up?
My wife threw away my alarm clock.
Do you have a phone?
She threw it in the garbage.
Why?
2 weeks ago, she had a shower at our house. And for some reason, when a woman has a shower, the other women that have never been to your house, they have to walk through your house.
You got
to
get the tour, yes.
She hates my alarm clock, and she looked for a reason over the years to throw it in the garbage.
I thought you had a nice alarm clock.
When I moved here back in 1998, I lived at Clark Nelm, a high rise right around the corner from the lodge. That's why I hung out there every weekend. But there was a jewel on the corner of
yeah,
Clark.
Yeah, like you wouldn't have found it if you didn't live around the corner.
It was wonderful. I love that. By the way, ask me how many bedrooms I had when I moved here.
How many bedrooms?
It was a bedroom.
Oh.
Okay. At Clark and Division, there was a Jewel, right? You guys remember
sure,
the Jewel there?
Yeah.
Of course,
okay.
Yeah, little one.
I bought an alarm clock there. It was white, had a nightlight on it, and it had red numbers.
I know it.
I've
what
had
year
it.
Was that?
It was 1998.
Okay.
I've had it for almost
1998.
19 years.
She threw it away.
She threw it in the garbage. She's like, it's ugly. We'll get you a new one. And she never got a new one. So I set my phone alarm. which I use all the time. If I'm out of town, I always use my phone alarm. I've never used it at home to wake up to do a morning show. So I woke up at 3 a.m. Oh, my God. I hope my phone goes off. I can't be late.
But by the way, yesterday you took a picture. You did a screenshot of all the alarms that you had set for this morning. There was like four or five of them.
I had four set.
And they were all set for a.m. and they were all on because I saw the picture of it. And you still woke up at 3 because you were worried.
Right. Been up ever since.
Dave, do you have an alarm clock?
I have a clock radio that has two alarms on it. But it never goes off because I always turn it off before. I always wake up ahead of the alarm. The first one is set to 7:20. And the second alarm, which is set for about 10 minutes later, has bird sounds. And occasionally I'll forget to turn that off.
Oh,
and so I'll come out of the shower and my wife, will you please turn off the birds?
Oh my gosh, that's the worst.
Then I have an old iPad or an iPod, which I set just as another backup. Right. But I've never... The key is, we've talked about this before too, is if you do this shift long enough, and this is now consecutively like 30 years I've been doing it, never hit snooze.
Never.
Never.
I agree.
Never hit the snooze.
Why?
Just
you'll
get
go right
up.
Back to sleep.
Well, no, it's just, you're going to have to get up. You'll feel worse.
You might as well just get up.
Yep.
Yeah, just get up.
Yeah.
I mean, Andrea hits snooze. Steve hits snooze. I won't hit snooze.
I won't hit snooze. I set three alarms, two on my phone, one on my clock radio, because I, too, still have a clock radio that I used in my dorm in college. It's got brown paneling, and it's very loud. So if that one goes off, I know I'm in trouble.
Instead of digital, does it have the little flaps that fall over? Remember those clock radios?
My sister actually has one of those.
Of course she does. Yeah.
Maria.
My wife threw away my alarm. So I was paranoid, and I woke up at 3.
We'll run over to Walgreens to get you a new one.
Oh, yeah. It's got to be black.
Why can't it be white?
She wants black now.
No, let's get you the same one. I'm sure I can find it at a garage sale this weekend.
I actually had two. I had one in the basement that I bought at the same time because I'm a twofer, just in case. She threw that one away, too.
She found it in your stuff before the girls took a tour. Yes. Because she knew you would put it back out.
It's 7:58. It's 7:20 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show. Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
8:14, Pete McMurray in for Steve Cochran. Jane Monzuris is in for Andrea Darlis and soon to be Dean Richards in just a second. You're going to be ready with entertainment.
We're both Greek, so it works out. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. And Dave Ennett, you have a time on Coach Ditka when he's on the show on Monday.
Yes, he will be on Monday at 8:40 beginning this Monday, and he will be on this afternoon with Rowan Anna at 4:40. So that begins today. Fridays
Ditka.
At 4:40, and then Monday mornings at 8:40.
The Bears. I love
that
the coach.
That is your entertainment report.
I love
he is entertaining.
All right.
Yeah.
Dean is on a cruise.
Good for Dean.
And just for the record, Jane and I are filling in for Dean this coming Sunday from 9 until 1.
And the following Sunday.
Yes.
Yeah, be fun-filled Sunday morning.
So what do you have for us
today?
Hey,
so this is big news in Hollywood. The super producer, Harvey Weinstein, is taking a leave of absence
from
the Weinstein Company because of a New York Times article that was released on accusing him of sexual harassment accusations against him dating back.
Wow.
Yes, to the 90s.
Did you read some of those stories in the New York Times?
No, but
he would invite women over for
stories.
A meeting at the, let's say, the Beverly Hilton Hotel or Beverly whatever. And instead of he would call down to the lobby and say, oh, can you send them up to my room? And he would walk out in a towel.
And then he would say, for some whatever you do in the hotel, some sexual
you give me a massage, I can take care of you.
Yes, thank you.
You give me a massage.
So
he did this for years.
Not only actresses, but dozens of current and former employees. He's made settlements with 8 of those. And this is all allegedly. This is coming from the New York Times article. Actresses, including Rose McGowan, who he's come to a settlement with already, and also Ashley Judd is the latest one to come forward. She did cite in a Variety article in 2015 about being sexually harassed by an unnamed mogul.
He's the guy. I'm sure he's done it for years.
Yeah, but he did issue a lengthy apology, saying that I want a second chance in the community, but he also disputes some of the specific allegations.
So he admits he has a problem.
Yes.
And he's taken a leave of absence.
And he's taken leave. He's working with their therapist. And in that leave of absence time, he's going to use his leave of absence to fight the NRA.
That's what Shouldn't he's going he to go through therapy?
Probably so. Maybe just take spare a step back. Yeah.
Okay.
So the 2018 Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominees announced already yesterday. Yeah.
Let's go through it.
Who gets in? Okay. I'm going to name some.
All right.
You guys tell me what you think. Does Bon Jovi get in?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
100%.
First ballot.
Bon Jovi. So that means that John and Richie will be on stage next year. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I can't wait. I'd love to go.
I love watching the show.
Barclays Center, Brooklyn. I'm in 100%.
Yeah. Radiohead.
Probably not.
Predictions say they will.
Really?
Yeah.
They're
yeah.
so popular.
The Moody Blues.
Yes.
Boy, that's the one on the fence. I'm going to have to say no.
Predictions say they do. Dire Straits.
Oh, absolutely. Mark Knopfler and Dire Straits.
People yeah, I would think so.
The God, Cars.
Absolutely.
They say no. Better resume than Dire Straits, but people want to honor Mark.
Rick Ocasek, Yes, absolutely.
Depeche Mode.
No.
I love Depeche Mode.
Yeah, I knew you would.
Yeah. Eurythmics.
Oh, absolutely. Annie
yeah,
Lennox?
I think so.
Yes.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Look at their body of work. That's what you have to look at.
Well, yeah, the resume, body of work. You okay. do, but it's the voters that make the decision. Rage Against the Machine.
Tom Morello, Libertyville's own. Rage.
I don't think so.
Right. No. I'm hearing no.
No.
What about Judas Priest?
I think Rage will get in, but not this time. Yeah, Judas Priest, absolutely
I
not.
I think the Cars will get in, but not this time. I hate saying that, but that's what...
Judas Priest, no.
I think no either. No. Jay Giles Band.
I would love it, but I don't think they're going to get in this year.
Not a ton of hits. Not. A...
What about Nina Simone?
I don't know who that is, but no.
She's a vocalist, but not a... I mean, I don't Nina think Simone. Rock and roll for Nina no. Simone.
Well, so they're saying... they argue that she's not rock and roll, but she's one of the most important artists of all time who's long... She's been waiting for this nomination
Madonna's
for a long time.
In the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It doesn't matter.
I would think of Madonna being more rock and roll than Nina Simone.
But they're kind of putting her in line with Joan Baez and Linda Ronstadt, Bobby Womack.
What song does she sing? I don't know who she is.
Google it, Pete.
The High Priestess of Soul.
You lost
yes,
me.
Yes, I love High Priestess.
You lost me, Laura.
I had to Google it.
There you go. See? That's what we do Google.
What about LL Cool J? He's nominated.
Is he really?
I don't think he gets in.
Is he rock and roll?
Well, it doesn't matter.
Well, fans can vote for nominees now through December 5th. The announcements will be made in December and be broadcast on HBO April 14th. I love that broadcast.
Remember when you were a kid and you used to write fan mail?
You wrote fan mail.
I wrote an email to Little Steven, you know, who's in the E Street Band. Years ago, he gave me his email. He is on the executive board for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And I made a push for Styx and REO, who should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Look at their body of work. Judas Priest, you can name two songs. Mm-hmm. Look at all the hits Styx had over the years.
Wait, REO is not in the Hall of Fame.
REO Speedwagon is not in the Hall of Fame.
What?
Look at all their hits.
They're dissing Illinois.
Look at all their hits.
Styx either.
Not in the
Styx
Rock and
is
Roll
Illinois,
Hall of Fame.
Right?
Yeah.
They should be in the Rock and
JY,
Roll Hall of Fame.
My neighbor growing up.
Yes.
Can we talk about the Netflix raising their subscription prices?
Yeah, I got to check my bill now.
This is a total bummer. So the subscription prices are going up for new and existing customers by 10%. I don't even know what I pay, but I guess
that's
they're
the problem.
Going up.
We all don't know. Are you a regular customer at $9.99 or are you a Premier where you can watch it on your computer or your phone, which is.
So that'll be like what? $11 then? It'll go up?
Yeah, so...
It goes up $1, 10%.
The top two plans went into effect October 5th, and then starting October 19th, the company begins to notify existing members about when their prices will increase. By the way, 52 million U.S. streamers are members. 52 million people stream and have Netflix.
I do.
I do, too.
Okay.
No. Just in theaters today, Blade Runner 2049. It's supposed to be huge, big, great, rave reviews.
Right.
You going to see it?
Dean liked it.
Yeah? Okay.
Maybe.
My Little Pony?
Nope.
The Mountain Between Us?
Don't know what that is.
And Victoria and Abdul.
That's you lost me.
I'm looking for a Victoria and Abdul.
There's really nothing that I've wanted to see at the movie theater lately. I love going to the movies with my wife, Sarah.
Dame Judi Dench.
I love her.
Victoria and Abdul. I love
her. That's my over 70 there woman right there.
There you go.
It's 8:21. Let's take a look at traffic. Here's Laura.
It's Friday, Friday. Gotta get down on Friday. Everybody's looking forward to the weekend, weekend. Friday, Friday. Getting down on Friday. Everybody.
It's 8:26. Pete McMurray in for Steve Cochran. Jane Monzuris is here. Sandberg, you'll appreciate this. I get a text from Jane yesterday. OMG! Exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point. I'm at apt. I go, great. She goes, no, this is the first time I've been here.
Oh, did you block off a few hours?
It was like a wonderland. I took pictures, rows and rows of most amazing appliances for my home and kitchen.
It is the most beautiful store.
What was your favorite thing?
Well, I told her, I go, Dave, I go, Jane, if you're there, go straight to Steve Shapiro's office. And what'd you do?
Well, I was checking out because I bought a TV, and I get the text from Pete, find Steve Shapiro. So I send to the guy, I'm like, hey, is Steve Shapiro here? And they said, well, who's calling? And I'm like, Jane, no. How do I put this? Tell it's Pete McMurray. And they're looking at me like, you're not Pete McMurray. I go, it's Jane on behalf of Pete McMurray. So, of course, he came right down, and he was so lovely, and we took a tour of the whole store together, and they have furniture upstairs. They have bedding on the other side. Yeah. They have a whole mall. Mm-hmm. They even have candy.
There's a cafe.
Yeah.
I heard Shapiro on Monday for show number 1,000.
Tuesday. He came on Tuesday. Yeah.
Was it Tuesday morning? Yeah. I sent him a text immediately afterwards.
Yeah.
I love when you talk about washer and dryers.
Ask for Shapiro. See if he's there. He's always there.
He's always there.
He's there morning till night. What? Like, always.
I've never been there, but apparently I shopped at Apt before because when they looked up my name, I had something shipped to my home.
You probably ordered it.
In Phoenix. I had no idea, so I thought it was a national chain of stores all over the country. And Steve's like, no, this is it. This is the 100 trillion square miles
what
of
year
storage
was that?
That I ordered something?
Yeah.
1998? 2001?
Yes. Yeah. Did you buy a washer and dryer?
I bought a refrigerator.
That's my next purchase.
But my favorite, Dave, that was the washer and dryer and the refrigerators. I love the double wides for the refrigerator, but the washer and dryers.
You're speaking my language, Jane.
Magnificent.
I still have the old washer with the thing in the middle that rips up your clothes.
Oh, the agitator?
Yeah.
I took a picture when I got my new washer and dryer last Friday.
Oh, I heard all about it.
I sent it to Mike and Steve, and I said, look at this washer without sans agitator. It is the most beautiful, shiny,
open space.
Beautiful. Yeah. And
it's
you almost
wonderful.
Kind of like don't know how to put clothes in just in the middle. Also, you put the laundry detergent in first and then you put the clothes in, which is, you know, a different routine than what I mean. But that's what the guy said to do. So that's what I'm doing.
They're so
it mixes
big.
It all up.
Yeah. It is so big. I can do 27 pairs of jeans. Wow.
I don't get that. Do you own 27 pairs?
I probably have like 17 at least. And then, you know, Catherine's got like 8.
12.
Pat's got, you know, if Catherine lived with us full time, she'd have way more jeans at our house, because she doesn't. But Pat's got jeans. But I do laundry. There's never a dirty piece of laundry in my house. So
do you do laundry then every single day?
Every single day, multiple. You're, a lot of times.
This is why we get along, because I'm the laundry guy in our house.
Do you do laundry every day?
All the time. I don't want my wife to touch it.
Why? Because you can't do it, or because you want to be nice?
I've been doing it since fifth grade, because coming from a large family, you got to, you know, do your own thing.
Right.
So I get it. And if she does it, she'll lay the clothes out, won't fold. Or she'll fold and not put them away. You got to go through the whole process.
I think so, too.
All the things of laundry that make me crazy, the dry clothes that don't get folded is, that's useless.
They might as well wrinkled. Be dirty again.
I got to
right?
put them back in there. Yeah. And do a fluff or something. It drives me crazy.
You got to fold immediately when they come out. I love doing laundry. It gives me a sense of satisfaction and peace and comfort.
Right, of course, because it gives you a sense of accomplishment.
I hate folding, but I fold. And I fold,
oh,
and I spent
you're
all
my
day
wife.
A couple.
I hate that.
No, I do the folding.
A couple days. No, you got to get that done right away.
No. I folded for a couple hours, like Saturday. Kurt said, "What did you do today?" I'm like, "I've been folding laundry all day."
Oh.
I fold very specifically, so that makes me no fun. Like when Patrick's getting a T-shirt out of his drawer, they're all folded perfectly, so you can see what the front of the T-shirt may
absolutely.
Say. And if he digs out at one from the bottom and like doesn't lay them back perfectly in their little piles. They're all stacked. Only four. Four up. Four each pile. Three across in the drawer.
Do you use the folder to fold around it like they did at the Limited?
I don't. But
that is crazy talk right there.
I used to do that at Gap. We had a plastic thing we folded.
I was just going to say, did you work retail?
I did. The denim wall in the back. I always would get, like, they would give you these little awards. Like, and Mary's getting a $15 gift certificate because she had the best looking denim wall. I'm like, that's right. I did. Perfectly. Big size on bottom, small size on top.
God, I love
the
Gap back in the day.
When you're folding the jeans, do you pull the back out or you fold them inward or outward?
I pull it out.
Yeah, I pull it out too, but Kurt pulls it the other way, and I'm like, no, that's not how you fold jeans.
That's a problem for me.
I know.
We are giving away a washer and dryer courtesy of App at WGNradio.com. Click on the contest page, and you'll see the Appliance Palooza there. And it's because, Sandberg, you have an obsession, and Steve from App said, hey, how about we do this for show number 1,000?
The listeners have to tolerate listening to me talk about laundry. They're going to win with
by getting
it. Everybody wins.
I love it.
Yeah.
It really.
I want to go back there
going.
Today. I'm going to stand in the wash and dry aisle. Right. Actually, I think I want to go by the ranges today.
Appliance Palooza. We're giving away a washer and dryer courtesy of Aft. Again, go to WGNradio.com and click on the contest page. You can't miss it. All right, quick break coming up. Kerry Wood. We'll talk Cubs playoffs on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
We're going to watch Kerry Wood hammer this pitch right down Broadway.
That was one of my favorite Kerry Wood moments. Game 7, 2003. Number 34 joins us right now on 720 WGN. It's Kerry Wood. Kerry, when you go back to Game 7, when you hit that home run, I watched that just the other day. And the trot around the bases. First of all, you're very serious during the games. But it was like you were going for an afternoon jog, just kind of taking your time around the bases, tied the game in Game 7. I mean, you remember that moment, right?
Yeah, I was floating. That's why I was going so slow. It was, and I love the fact that you opened the show with me as a hitter. It's awesome. That's why I love it. It's my favorite show. The adrenaline. The adrenaline hit me, and it just zapped everything. It was like that's as fast as I can move.
I love that footage, and they show Sarah. Were you guys married back in 2003?
We were.
Okay. They showed a shot of your wife, and she was going absolutely berserk. I'll never forget that.
Yeah,
I thought that was it. I thought, this is it, man. It's fate. We're going to the World Series.
I did, too. Yeah, I think we all did, Pete. I think.
I mean, I hate
it. Was,
he just dove into depression.
That was nice, Pete.
That's awesome.
I know.
Now it's become my least favorite show.
I've known you forever, and we've never really talked about 2003, and this gives us a chance because Dusty Baker now is the Nationals manager, and you played for him. So give me, what kind of playoff manager is Dusty Baker?
Well, I mean, I tell you what, Dusty, he may want this more than anyone just because of the history of, and his postseason history, and obviously his history with his postseason in Chicago. So he may want this more than anybody, but his team will most definitely be motivated and they'll be ready to go. I expect them all to play, he'll have them ready and fired up, and I expect them to play with a little bit of an edge and probably a little bit of an attitude. So, it's nice to have great seasons and you win your division and all that, but when it comes down to the playoff time, it's go time, and I expect him to have his guys ready like he always does.
Dave Ennett's taking the Cubs in five.
It would be a lot less stressful for all of us if they could sweep, Kerry, but I'm trying to be realistic about it.
Yeah, I like him in four. I think we're going to – whether Scherzer's hamstring is – bother him or not, it's still going to be in the back of his mind a little bit, especially for the first few innings until he gets comfortable. So I think if we can get a lesser Scherzer and get to him early, I think we can take him out of the equation. But I like the Cubs in four.
What's your read on where Arrieta is right now?
I've got no read on Jake. I have no idea. Obviously, they're pushing him back and letting him get some more rest, and game four is obviously a huge game either way, so we'll have a stud in that slot. But as far as those two guys and their hamstrings, I'm not sure if one's ahead of the other or one's more serious than the other. So I really don't know much on Jake either.
I mean, they kind of offset each other in a way, those two injuries. I mean, you've kind of got the same scenario with both teams.
Yeah, you'd almost want to match those guys up and just let the best hamstring win.
That's it.
Right? Just the hamstring game. Let those guys match up and go from there. But again, it's an issue when you're dealing with you got a Nats staff with number one, number two legitimate 1-2 punch in Scherzer and Strasburg, and if one of those guys isn't 100%, it definitely is going to it's going to help the other squad. So I like our starters. I like our rotation. I love Hendricks going first, and
I do too.
Lester with his postseason, with Lester's history and his numbers and his postseason, number two is a great slot for him. Either we're up 1-0 and he's going to put his foot on their throat, or we're down 1-0 and he's going to stop the bleeding and get the series back even. So I like Lester in that spot. So I like our guys. I like even Quintana's been throwing the ball well. He finished strong and seems to be locked in. So I like our staff.
Does Lackey come out of the bullpen?
I think Lackey does, especially in the first series. I think he's an insurance policy. If Hendricks gets in for some unforeseen trouble in the first game and ends up going 2 or 3 innings and has to come out, you've got Lackey in the pen there. It can come up and chew those innings up so we don't kill our pen in the first game of the series and then the pen's shot for the rest of the series. So he's an insurance policy there, and obviously we get past that first series. He plays a bigger role in the second series. But I actually like the way John's been throwing the ball down the stretch, and he'll be a nice guy, a nice addition to have out there.
The big question is, what's going on with Joe Maddon's hair?
I haven't seen it. What's he got working now?
He's dyeing it.
Black.
It's not silver anymore. It's kind of like a darker gray type of thing.
Maybe he's taking on a little more serious role. What's he trying to do with that?
I don't know. And he admits that he is dyeing his hair. He brought it up in a press conference.
Has he already done it?
Yes.
It's been ongoing.
For a while.
Yeah.
Hey, slowly changing it?
I don't know.
Maybe it's just growing out darker.
Didn't think anybody would notice. Everyone noticed. Right.
Hey, Kerry, where do you watch the game tonight?
Tonight I'm watching at home. I'm going to watch at home tonight. I think actually I'm going to try to watch as many as I can from home this year. I was at most of the games last year except for the San Francisco series. And as fun as that was and what a ride it was to be able to travel with them and experience that postseason with those guys last year, it was awesome. But it was exhausting, and I think I want to watch a little more baseball this year. So I think I'm going to try to watch as many games as I can at home and get some coverage along with it and sit and really kind of lock into this series.
And with your kids too, it's fun.
Yeah, it's great. No, it's my son's. He's 11. He's asking a lot more questions. He's a lot more into it this summer. And it's great to see when your local team wins a World Series. It has a tendency to do that to the kids that are in the area. So it's been a great little boost to baseball in the house for him. And even my daughters are getting into it. So it's been cool.
Nice.
And you can really give them the right answers, unlike most dads.
What does it mean coming
down the stretch? Yeah, of course they don't.
What was that pitch, Dad? It was a curve.
He knows what's going on. Yeah. Hey, Kerry, October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and we absolutely adore and love your amazing wife, Sarah. She is a breast cancer survivor. How proud are you that she is now an advocate for breast cancer screening?
Well, she's been amazing, and I know when it first happened, she was overwhelmed and didn't, had a hard time talking about it. But obviously, going through what she's been through and coming out on the other end of it and being healthy, she's been such an advocate for other women. And I hear her on the phone, 3 or 4 times a week, unfortunately, giving advice and helping other women. So she's been amazing. She's impressed me and beyond belief of what she's been able to handle and go through and all the things on her plate that she's been able to still juggle going through this. And it's a scary time for families. It's a scary time for everybody in the family. So it's, we were lucky to have such a strong, positive patient in the house.
She's a rock star, man. 1 in 8 women get breast cancer, which is horrible. It really is.
And Sarah's going to be on the air with us this Sunday, Pete.
Yes, she is.
Going to tell her story.
So,
yeah.
Kerry today, yeah. Sarah on Sunday.
Yeah.
Who's the better guest?
We'll tell you Monday. If Sarah hangs up on us, then it'll be even.
Kerry, great to talk to you, man. Have a good weekend.
Great talking to you guys. Enjoy the series.
All right.
We love you, Kerry.
Too.
Kerry Wood. All right, it's 8:57, quick break, and we'll be back with news top of the hour at 7:20, WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Can I get some thank you note writing music, please? Thank you, Barack, for proving you're not a lame duck, but my very own silver fox. Thank you, Inauguration Day. Or as I like to call it, let's move.
Yes, let's move. Finally, thank you, Mrs. Obama, for always promoting physical fitness. And hey, since you like exercise so much, how about running for president?
Oh.
It is 9:10. We're live on CLTV and 7:20 WGN. Pete McMurray, Jane Monzuris, Dave Ennett, and joining us in studio, she is the former assistant to the President of the United States, the former chief of staff for Michelle Obama. She is an advocate for women's rights and equality, and she is back in Chicago as a partner at Buckley Sandler Law Offices. It's Tina Chen. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Excited to be here on a Friday morning.
I have talked to my cousin Ray about you. We've sent text messages. He and his wife, Kathy, are great friends with you.
Oh, they are. He was a fantastic Secretary of Transportation, I got to say. And he and Kathy just are wonderful people.
Okay, walk me through this. So you're friends with the Obamas and he gets elected president and he calls you up and says, let's go. How does that work?
That's kind of it. You know, I've known them for long enough that none of the three of us can remember how we met way back sometime in the distant past.
So you really don't, you can't say we met at
I have no firm, really great here's how we met story.
Really?
I've tried. I've thought about making one up. But it just was long enough ago doing, you know, Democratic politics. And then I've supported all his campaigns, did a lot of work in the presidential campaign, used to fly around on my own dime.
Well, tell me what it was like, because he used to come on my show when he was senator, and then he went dark on me. You know, there he left.
I wonder why.
But what was it like before he was senator?
You know, the great thing about both of them is they are the same people they have always been. And they are the same people you see in front of the camera as behind the camera. And I think that's why the American people responded to them so well all this time, is because they're very authentic. They are not somebody different when they're talking to you in the press versus talking to me just, you know, behind the scenes.
And when he was running for president, did you just know this is going to happen?
Are you kidding? No. Remember? I mean, really, back then, right? Hillary Clinton's running. She's got, you know, he's like some nobody that people have hardly heard of with this name that, you know, people
can't
pronounce.
Well, the speech at the Democratic convention, what year was that?
It was 4 years prior.
Four years
eight
prior.
Years prior to him
when
running.
When he made that speech.
When John Kerry was nominated
That's
in 2004.
Right.
Yeah. But even still, you know, so Democratic insiders kind of saw it and people who watched it. But like all these people in Iowa, right, you know, the first state in the nation to hold the primary, like, right. Who is this guy? And he just did a lot of hard work. We had people who lived in Iowa starting in 2007 all the way through to that, you know, caucus in January of 2008.
Really?
And when he won, it was a shocker. You know, if you go back and you remember. Now it seems like, of course, we all knew.
Yeah,
we didn't.
So how quickly – so he wins. And was it already a given? Like, hey, we're going to call Tina. She's coming with us. Or how quickly soon after did they call you and say, okay, move to D.C.? Will you?
It was pretty soon. I mean, by the time we got to Thanksgiving – you know, I went and told my family, okay, we're moving to D.C. So we knew. It was like I had accepted the job before we got to Thanksgiving.
And they already pre-offered you the job?
No, not before the election. Before the election, no one was talking. You know, if they
did
were
they
talking,
say, hey, listen, if you work on our campaign, Tina, we got a little end.
No, because I was happy here. I got to tell you, I had a great life here. I was a partner at a big firm here, Skadden-Arps, that I loved. I had a house I loved. My kids were happy. And I wasn't looking to go to D.C. and uproot myself. So it was, and I really only would have done it for something that he needed done and important, and going to the work in the White House was kind of one of those things.
And was it a formal phone call? Was it a letter? Were you guys just having cocktails at, like, you know?
You know, it was a conversation, conversation, and the sealer on the deal was me and Valerie and Jarrett, you know, at the Starbucks over at, up on Michigan Avenue.
It was a Starbucks meeting.
Closer was a Starbucks
it's
meeting.
It's always at Starbucks, isn't it?
That's where the movers and shakers
are. You were the chief of staff for the first lady.
I was.
And the assistant to the most powerful man on the planet.
Yeah.
Walk me through a day. What was it like? Where did you live in Washington? You drove to the White House.
I did. I drove to the White House, had a great, sweet parking spot right near the doorway.
It's all about parking. You can tell you're from Chicago.
You wear your heels every day if you want.
Best parking spot ever. It's like right next to the doorway to the West Wing of the White House. You know, you kind of drive through the gates. The dogs are sniffing your car every morning, and you go in there. Every day was different, other than the fact that it started at 7:30 in the morning in the president's chief of staff's office. Yeah, like bad. 7:30 in the morning, you were there. And we had both a small meeting with the senior advisors and then a larger meeting at 8:30 with the broader group of people in the White House. And then from there, the day went all sorts of different ways. You know, we could be traveling to New York, you know, to go be on Fallon. We could be, you know, doing gardening and for Let's Move. You know, we could be having to deal with news of the day, you know, as you've seen what has happened.
Sure.
You know, I've thought this week about imagining what it would have been, you know, the days that we had in the White House where we had to deal with unexpected hurricanes and unexpected tragedies. And those are tough days.
And then those days, those pressure cooker kind of days, do you just run into a special room? Are you just kind of, on the standby? Are you in the think tank?
You know, there are all different ways. I mean, there, you know, depending on what the issue is, different people have different roles in the White House. So it's never the same. And sometimes it's a national security issue. So there's something happening in the Situation Room.
Right.
You got to go in there. Sometimes it's just finding out what, you know, a lot of times it's looking on CNN and seeing what's next and going in and briefing Mrs. Obama. And here's the latest thing that's happened.
You said you start your day with the chief of staff, so that was Rahm Emanuel back in the day.
Well, the first 2 years, it was Rahm, and then it was Bill Daley, you know, Chicagoans.
Yeah.
And then Jack Lew took us through the election year, and our last chief of staff was Dennis McDonough.
Tell me about Rahm as chief of staff. Everybody said he was a pit bull.
Yeah, he's Rahm, right? He was
right.
Rahm is also someone who's always the same.
Yes,
right.
Yeah,
and you know he was tough, but I got to tell you, remember what was happening those first 2 years? We were in a fiscal free fall. Nobody knew where
oh
we were going to go.
You're right. The
right?
Recession of 2008.
We were bleeding. You know, hundreds of thousands of
401ks,
every day.
Everything.
People were losing their jobs.
And it wasn't really a certainty that how we were going to come out of it.
Yeah.
So having Rahm with the focus that he had, understanding Congress the way he did and what it took to get the Recovery Act passed, then what it took, you know, to implement the Recovery Act. And your cousin, Secretary LaHood, transportation infrastructure building and getting money out to build roads and create those jobs was a big part of the recovery. And he was a big part of that.
I thought President Trump, I thought that would be the first thing that he would do is push through the infrastructure bill.
Yeah.
How come we haven't seen that?
Well, I don't know. I'm not.
That's a no-brainer. I mean, both parties are for it. Just get it through and start generating some jobs.
You would think.
It'll make you look good.
You would think. You would think. You know, why they continue to try to undo something that's given 20 million people more health care is their first thing. I can't explain, other than they're just so opposed to it, but they don't have an alternative that will provide health care to people.
When you look back at that staff, I know, you know, if we start a new job, we all bring in our buddies. I mean, President Obama brought in a ton of Chicago people, but Josh Earnest was such a great ad. I loved him. He used to come on WGN all the time. Very calm, very intelligent, always said the right thing. And then you see the press secretary, Sean Spicer, just left. And now you have Sarah Huckabee. What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, Josh is someone who, you know, came in, you know, worked on the campaigns, you know, came in, it's part of the family, grew up. You know, one of the things, if you see over the course of the administration, the president did was promote people from within and as they grew and took some chances on some young staffers who came, you know, did amazing jobs. And Josh really understands the president, you know, understands the objectives that we were trying to achieve in the White House, prepared amazingly. I mean, Josh, every morning before he hit that podium, would be reviewing, you know, a book, you know, 10 inches thick, you know, of what are the issues of the day? What are the questions of the day? All the staff would go in and brief him ahead of time. So it's a lot of hard work to, you know, carry off those sort of half an hour briefings in front of the press corps.
Sure. I mean, usually, traditionally, if you work on the campaign, you get a job somewhere in the administration. I don't feel that's the way with the Trump administration.
You know,
because you have a vested interest if you work on the campaign. It's like, all right, my guy won. We're going to work hard in Washington.
It's hard for me to speak to their administration. But here's the thing. Look at what his trajectory was. You know, we had a campaign that started going in like 06, right? Mm-hmm. So we had people who built their way. We built a campaign organization. We had staff in all 50 states. I don't get the sense that that's the way the Trump campaign was. It came out of the blue.
Right.
You know, he was from top down. I don't think they had people, a field organization, the way we did. So I'm not even sure they have that many people who were in their campaign that they're trying to bring in the White House that understand them.
It's just the respect for the office of the president of the United States, be it the president who's in the office right now or people that are looking at the president that don't like the president. And the death threats and the negativity. It's like we forgot.
Right.
And no, that starts at the top.
It does. Tone at the top. It all starts at the top. And I'm very proud of our White House, which started with the tone that the Obamas set for how we were going to be respectful, how we were going to include everybody. You know, diversity and inclusion was a huge value
sure.
that we had.
So let's talk about you. After these 8 years in the White House and then coming back to Chicago, what would you tell your younger self? What would you tell yourself that just graduated from law school at Northwestern?
You know, be open to taking risks, you know, because I'm not a big risk taker. And that, you know, uprooting my family, you know, 9 years ago and moving halfway across the country was probably the biggest risk I've taken. And it came out great. I had no idea how long I'd stay. I kept my house here. I was always prepared, like, okay, this is going to work out. I could come home, turn on a dime if I needed to. And so I'm as surprised as anybody that it, you know, I wound up being 8 years. But I think that's what it is. It's, you know, it's hard to take risks.
Yeah.
And but sometimes they don't pay off, but sometimes they can pay off big time.
Tina Chen in studio with us. We're going to take a quick break and we're going to talk about women's rights when we come back because you're a huge advocate of women's rights. We're live on CLTV and 720 WGN. It is 9:24 in studio with us. We're live on CLTV and 720 WGN. Tina Chen, the former chief of staff for Michelle Obama and the assistant to the president, in studio with us. You are an advocate for women's rights.
I am.
I have four working sisters. I have a working 82-year-old working mother. My wife is a working mother. Women still make 79 cents to the dollar to men. Will this ever change?
Well, that's one of the things we're working. We worked hard in the administration to try to change. It's one of the things I'm really proud of the law firm I've just joined because I think, you know, if we're not going to have public policy that changes, we're going to have to do it in the private sector. Buckley Sandler, the law firm I just joined, is, you know, promotes women. They have this wonderful, you know, leave policy that's not just a great policy on paper, but it's one that all the women who've had kids have taken, have come back to work and stayed at the law firm. Gone on to make partner. And the other stat I love is that 100% of the men at Buckley Sandler who've had kids have taken paid family leave because they've set a culture that says we value families,
right.
We do great law and still value families at the same time. So
gender
I'm really excited
equality.
To be there.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We've got to change the way work is organized, right? We can't say to people, you just figure out your own child care. You figure out when your kid is sick and how to come into work.
Right.
You know, we as a country and as employers, you know, private sector business here. And if you want to grow and compete in a global economy, you know, you've got to be responsive to your workers and you've got to support them.
Boy, you said it. Working parents and your kid gets sick, you're scrambling. It's rough stuff, man.
Yeah.
Well, and we were talking about equal pay. The Equal Pay Act was passed
in the 60s.
Okay, and we're still talking
still
about
talking
it
about
today.
It.
Still
Why?
Talking about it. Because, you know, I think one of the things that we were in favor of was pay transparency. You know, there's a lot of secrecy about pay.
Yeah.
Think about it, right?
Absolutely.
And so if you don't know, the landmark case, Lilly Ledbetter, right? She, you know, didn't know for 20 years that she was getting underpaid until somebody slipped her a note because it was illegal for her work, you know, in her workplace to talk about pay. We actually had an executive order that unfortunately I think was just rescinded that, you know, said it, you know, employers, if you're a federal contractor, you cannot prohibit your employees from talking about their pay. You know, you can't discipline them for that. We issued an executive order, also now recently rescinded, that, you know, required employers to report to the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission what their pay bands are so that people can actually see it. Because if you can't see it, then you don't even know you're getting underpaid.
Right.
And that's a big piece of, you know, what we need to solve in this country.
The Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos, recently said, let's hold off on sexual assault cases, how they're being investigated on college campuses.
Yeah, I was very, very disappointed and worried as the mother of a young woman in college myself. You know, we issued what's called the Dear Colleague Letter in 2011 to make it clear that colleges and universities and high schools, too, have a responsibility to make sure their school environments are free of sexual harassment and sexual violence. Because we know from survey after survey, 1 in 5 young women who attend college
right.
will experience sexual violence before she graduates. And 1 in 16 young men will be sexually assaulted before they graduate from college. And schools weren't doing anything. They were telling victims, well, maybe you should just withdraw from school if you're worried about running into the alleged perpetrator. And we wanted to set up programs for schools to respond to that. You know, we, you know, to adjudicate it when it's, you know, people are concerned about fairness to the accused. We think we had a process that was very fair. I think schools had a hard time implementing it. It's always hard to implement something new.
Right.
But we don't throw out doing hard things, right? Right. When they're the right thing to do, when they're the thing that we need to do to protect our children.
So why would they come forward now?
Why would they come forward? That's the thing. I mean, the problem is they weren't coming forward before. We were trying to create an environment where they could. And if now the scale is going to be tipped in favor of perpetrators, why would victims? I mean, this idea that there is a proliferation of false reports just isn't true. I mean, the surveys show that there's, you know, the rate of false reporting is about 6%.
Mm-hmm.
Because who would put yourself through that?
Nobody would.
Right.
You're right. Yeah. I love that you came in.
Oh,
it's so great to me. I've seen your work. I saw you on Bloomberg TV. I've seen you on Fox. I mean, it really is a pleasure to meet you.
Oh, well, it is my pleasure to be here. And, you know, I've been following WGN for years and years. So I love being here.
And we're glad you're back in Chicago.
And so am I.
She said after the 8 years, it's like you're, if you stay longer than your 8. I said, why don't you just stay in D.C.? And your answer?
Well, you know, it is kind of like high school. Like, you're still here. You're hanging around. You're out. You've
time
been gone.
Did
you graduate? Get out of here.
Right. Time to go. Tina Chen, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Coming up, we have a celebrity chef that's going to be coming in studio.
Boy, can it get any better?
But I need for everyone to listen up for Abigail Grace. Remember, caller 7 wins. We are giving away a $100 gift card to Paper Source, the premier paper source for unique gifts, cards, stationery, and crafts. So listen up for
the Paper Source.
Abigail Grace. Of course you do. It's 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Music is a world within itself, with a language we all understand. With an equal opportunity for all to sing, dance, and clap their hands.
Congratulations to Kathy from Huntley. She picked up the $100 gift card to Paper Source, the premier paper source for unique gifts, cards, stationery, and crafts. Wanted to get Stevie in there, of course. 720 WGN 944. We're live on CLTV in studio with us. She's a great cook.
This is so exciting.
She is a James Beard Foundation award-winning chef and restaurateur from Miami, Florida. She will be at Macy's on State Street today giving instruction and talking about her new cookbook, Cuisine a Latina. What she'll sign for you, it's Michelle Bernstein in studio with us. It's great to see you. Did I pronounce that right?
You actually did.
Cuisine Latina.
Sadly, there are no R's, so you can't roll them. But yes, you
can just do it on the side.
You're one of the first people that have actually gotten that.
Really?
Yeah, because most people think it should say Cocina Latina, which was too Latin.
Uh-huh.
Cuisine, which is the foundation of what I learned the French way, because I lived there for a while, getting beat up and learning the cuisine of France, and then the Latina part, because that's my lower half. So, yeah.
It's my lower half. So your father is a Russian immigrant, right? And your mother's from Argentina?
Well, they're all Jews. I mean, my mother's a Cohen. My father's a Bernstein.
Yes.
My mother is four generations Argentine. My father, from Minneapolis, Minnesota, came from Russia. I mean, they all came from either Austria or Russia because we're Ashkenazi Jews. But then they assimilated, became very Latin. And then my father always wanted to meet some of his family that ran to Uruguay to hide before and after the war. And when he went to Uruguay, to this beautiful place called Punta del Este, there was my mother. And they met, fell in love, and he brought her to Minnesota years later. And then they got smart, moved to Miami where it was warmer, and I was born.
My my neighbor is a Russian immigrant. He came here when he was three. When his father comes to town, who is from St. Louis now, he comes to town, he sits at the end of the bar, and if you go up and talk to his father, you have to do a shot of vodka. And he sits there with a handle. Is that what happens at your house?
Definitely not. it's more like matzo ball soup and some wine.
Okay. Well, we have that too.
That's great.
We're a little more gentle.
Okay. Yeah. We have that too. I'm glad you're wearing the white coat. What is it with chefs in the white coat? Shouldn't they be dark coats because they get dirty?
No. Traditionally, we wear white coats because that was always what was worn. Believe it or not, these don't stain. I don't know what it is and how intelligently they're made. But no matter what you get on it, you have a wipey or a little soapy towel and you brush it off and it's you're all good.
Special we chef's also, coats don't stain?
They don't stain too much, no. Huh. And if, well, I mean, I'm a good washer too. Right. But no, I've never stained a chef coat in my life. Uh-uh.
You're a mother,
you're
right?
A great cook. I am.
Wipey and soapy. That's why I got it. How old is your kid? Five,
he's
six?
Six
years
old.
Okay. Jane is the cook on the show. She cooks nonstop.
Yes. She told me she's very passionate.
I love cooking, and I love seeing you on TV and all of the shows that you're doing and all of your restaurants. And so I'm so excited that you're here in Chicago.
And we got to get dirty and talk food.
We got to get dirty and talk food.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, so tell us about, I don't even know where to start with you because I'm looking at the clock and I know how much time we have. I could talk to you for an hour and a half. When did you first know that you were a good cook? I want to do this. I'm good at this.
That's a two-part question. Uh-huh. When I was seven, I could cook risotto and osso buco and braised meats better than probably a lot of people, just because that's what my mother taught me. And when she went off to work, she would leave me, you know, a recipe-ish on a piece of paper and be like, okay, I'll be home at 6, throw this chicken in the oven, do this with it. And I would do that when I was like 9 and 10.
Wow.
But I was a dancer. My whole life was ballet. And so I didn't even know that there was a possibility to be a chef, because whenever I would go to sleep reading cookbooks, by the way, you would have thought that I was
You're
known
kidding.
This. No. I read all of her cookbooks at night and I would go to sleep literally with a huge cookbook on my lap. And, you know, you'd always see these big, burly, you know, European-style chefs with a big knife in their hand. Yeah. And that, to me, was a chef.
Right.
You know, the guys you were terrified to send back a plate of food to. So years later, I never, ever expected that this would happen. I didn't know I was allowed. I was told I was too slight. I was told that, you know, I was too much of a little princess to be in a kitchen for
too
whatever
kind
reason.
And your smile is so big you know, just, you're not yeah.
I wasn't tough enough but one chef grabbed me and said, go to the gym, start working out, show them you're just as stronger than they are, act tough, you can do it. And I pretended I was a tough guy. I never was, but I pretended to be, and everybody kind of believed me after a while.
And you did it. Yeah. I mean, isn't it still a male-dominated? We see now the celebrity chef, which is what you are. And we've seen that grown into something that's huge popularity with all the TV shows. Is it still a very male-dominated industry?
For some reason, it is.
Yeah.
Sadly, yeah. And I can't blame the industry for it. I don't know if there is blame. I don't know if the work is just too hard. I'll tell you one thing. It's really hard to be a mom and a chef at the same time.
Of
because
course.
To be a chef, right. You have to dedicate so much of your time and attention more than anything. So that was really hard for me, which is probably why I started so late as being a mom. That we just don't – you don't see a lot of executive and corporate chefs as women. Not enough, at least.
Right.
You know? And again, I don't know if there's blame to throw.
Right.
But maybe we just don't make it.
But we're seeing a lot more women, too, like in the spotlight, like
Thank
yourself
goodness, yes.
And so many more. And I'm, you know, I watch all the shows.
You guys have Stephanie here.
We love
Stephanie.
Stephanie,
she's amazing.
And
she just
Sarah
became
Grunewald.
A mom.
She did?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Stephanie, yeah. She has a baby. And it's awesome to see. But it ain't easy.
What time are you at Macy's today? 12 o'clock.
Yeah.
Okay. When we come back, we're going to have you explain what you brought, and I'm going to ask you about beating Bobby Flay because I watched that show. I love it. My son got me into it. Michelle Bernstein in studio. Her cookbook is entitled Cuisine a Latina. She'll be at Macy's on State Street today at noon at 720 WGN. Congratulations to Tracy in Highland. She picks up a pair of tickets to see Tony and Tina's wedding. It is the 1,000th show this week for Steve Cochran, and congratulations. We're giving away prizes all week long. Michelle Bernstein is in studio with us, a celebrity judge on Top Chef, of course. She has her new cookbook out called Cuisine a Latina. She'll be at Macy's on State Street today signing her cookbook, You Beat Bobby Flay. But first, tell us what you're going to make here on CLTV.
Okay, so I know I'm from Miami, and we don't really do fall in Miami as much right. as we want to. But I decided to do fall here. So I'm making you the salad that we're starting off with today,
okay.
Which is baby kale, roast calabaza, or butternut squash, done with a little bit of nice brown sugar, olive oil, salt, cinnamon, candied pecans, pecorino cheese, and balsamic. Very simple. I wanted to make my arroz con pollo today, which I'm making tonight yes. At Macy's, and I switch out the rice for couscous.
Really?
And it's lovely. Yeah. So
this guy right here.
Is that in the cookbook?
No.
Oh. Dave Ennett loves kale.
Arroz con pollo. Do you love kale?
I do.
Yes. He's a kale guy.
I do eat
Seriously.
Kale.
Baby, regular, curly, Tuscan, all of it.
All of it.
What do you do with it?
Salads and
don't you saute it too? Aren't you a saute guy?
I haven't really sauteed it.
Oh, you really should.
You can make kale chips too if you like the salty snack foods.
Also, so you know what I do every morning though?
What?
To get a good healthy meal, I just love fried eggs, and so I take really good extra virgin olive oil and I start frying the egg. And right when it's almost done, I throw in a big handful of chopped kale, and the kale cooks next to the egg. And that's what I eat for breakfast. And it's kind of like having a salad and an egg, but it's just a wonderful combination.
And they're getting all the good nutrients from the egg, too, and
right.
the yolk.
And then I eat crappy later.
Yeah,
but at least I know I'm starting my day right.
Tell me about beating Bobby Flay. We got about a minute and a half left. Tell me about that.
Okay, so I went on the show. Bobby is actually a lovely guy. He's the first guy that ever got me onto Food Network, and then I got my show after that
right.
because of him. And so I felt so guilty because we really kicked his butt. the ingredient was onions, which when we both saw the ingredient, he looked at me, I looked at him, and he's like, he used a word I'm not going to use on the air, but he was like, oh, you
right.
know what?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so we got stuck peeling a lot of onions that day, and I just got lucky. I think he was tired. He's a busy guy.
How many times has someone beaten him on the show?
That's a great question.
Not very often.
I think it's probably about a 40%, 35%.
Yeah, I've seen him get beat before.
Really?
Yeah,
I've never seen
beat.
It. Okay.
Yeah, but I'm glad I got him. Let's just put it that way.
That's impressive.
He's a good guy.
And you're on the Macy's Culinary Council.
I am.
Expert chefs from all over the country.
There's four of us, and I've been on it for about 7 to 8 years, and I'm honored, and I love Macy's, and it's a wonderful store, and they take me in, and I get to do these demonstrations around the country and meet with people that I'd never meet, you know, normally, and it's lovely. Everybody's always so great there, and it's a great store to work in.
What is the website that people can go and get your cookbook?
Well, the cookbook, they can go anywhere. They can go on Amazon if they want to get it, but you know, you can look under chefmichellebernstein.com to find all the information out that I'm doing now, because I'm always doing all kinds of different stuff. And of course, always Macy's.com for any other information about any events that might be popping up for Macy's, because they bring chefs all over the country. I'll be going to Minnesota soon and Los Angeles with them. And it's really wonderful.
Good for you. It's a pleasure
you.
To meet you. Thank
this
you for coming.
Great
in.
Multitasking.
I know.
Yes.
It's unbelievable.
Next
you are so
me.
Good.
Can do wow.
And I haven't seasoned well.
I know.
Way.
I got to take a quick
big
break.
Big Goldie Hawn smile.
I know. You
love
do.
It.
You have
amazing.
That
Goldie.
You do have that Goldie Hawn look.
Thank you.
Michelle Bernstein that. Today, Macy's Cuisine a Latina is her cookbook. Thank you for coming in. It's 720 WGN.